You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 290. This week, we talk about Odyssey, Off to Far Ithaca. Visit WelcomeToComics.com. Hear past episodes. See what we're reading next. Or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now, the cast begins.
I watched only once, surprisingly. I don't know why I didn't watch it more times. I need to watch it again. But yes, I did see it.
Because I remember in college, you brought that book up a lot, the whole book series.
Yeah, actually, about sometime last year, I read the whole series again, kind of in anticipation for the movie. It's funny going on to the Dark Tower subreddit. Man, it's like an even split. People either are excited for it or they absolutely hate it.
Aww.
And the thing is, the arguments for people who hate it are like all over the place. They're like, some people don't like it because it doesn't look like it's true to the book, but come on, it's an adaptation, so it's not going to be the same. And then other people are like, it looks too action-y, and it's like, they're going to show the action in the trailer.
It's a trailer.
Right. I mean, yeah, they're going to make it look exciting. And some people don't think Idris Elba is a good choice for Roland. Not necessarily because of the race thing. Because Roland, I mean, it's never like, I don't think they ever say like outright that Roland is Caucasian. But like in the comics, he's drawn that way. And I think people just kind of assumed. I have no problem. I love Idris Elba. I think he's an amazing actor, and I'm excited to see him play Roland.
I have no prior exposure, and I think he looked great in the trailer.
Well, some people said that he doesn't look like gritty enough. And I think what they mean by that is people kind of expect Roland. I mean, if you read the novel, Roland kind of, you know, he evokes a certain Clint Eastwood vibe. You know how Clint Eastwood looks? He just, like, looks worn out.
Yeah, he's got that craggy face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Idris Elba doesn't have a craggy face. But I don't think it looks cool. I don't think it matters. I think he looks cool.
Yeah.
I think the way that they show him reloading the revolvers is awesome.
That's fucking sick. How he like throws the bullets up in the air and just moves the gun onto them.
Because in the book, he's like supernaturally good with these rifles. I mean, with the revolvers.
Pistols. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like otherworldly. And so it's cool that they show that, or like when he, there's one where he runs gun across his belt. And it's kind of hard to tell because it's fast.
Yeah.
But he runs it across the bullets on his belt and they go into the gun somehow.
Hey.
Another complaint I heard was they showed Jake too much. Jake is the boy.
Yeah.
The like little kid or like 10-year-old. But it's like, come on, it's like a 2-minute trailer. Jake is a main character in the first book. I mean, I assume that this is going to cover the first book. Or parts of the first and second book. I don't think it's going to go into the second book, though, because they didn't show... Because in the first book, the only real characters are Roland, Jake, and the Man in Black. And then there's some, like, side characters that Roland meets. But yeah, it's just those three. There's other main characters in the book series, but you don't really meet them until the second book.
I mean, from what I can tell of the trailer, at least, like, it seems like the boy is kind of the audience's vehicle to get to this other world, in which case he's kind of got to be kind of a main figure, and you're going to see him a lot. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
No, he's. I mean, the thing is, like, people See, people like other people I've talked to this book about, or this book series, who have experience with it, either read the whole thing and absolutely loved it, or couldn't, like, get through the first book. The first book is short, but, like, not a lot transpires. I mean, it's very much about, like, kind of introduces you to Roland and kind of what his quest is all about. I think the books are great. I really like them. But some people don't. And it kind of goes, it's like about, like, multiple universes and this kind of thing. I mean, so what the dark, this is not a spoiler, but the Dark Tower itself is the center of all existence. So all the worlds converge at the Dark Tower. And in the book, you see, like, the beams pointing at the dark, in the trailer, there's, like, the beams pointing at the Dark Tower.
Those are the different worlds. Like,
they, like, hold the universe together. And as the beams break, reality starts to unravel. And so the story is about, like, Roland has to get to the Dark Tower to try to set this right. And the Man in Black is one of the, who is Matthew McConaughey's character, is one of the forces acting against the Dark Tower.
I love that in all of this, he's fixing things with guns. One of my favorite moments from the trailer was the, it's the easy laugh, but when Idris Elba's character is like, don't they have guns on Earth? And the kid's like, you're gonna like it.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. I mean,
there are lines like that in the book, though.
Yeah, that's great.
So, I mean, the thing is, like, Roland is we consider him, like, to us, he's like a gunslinger, like a cowboy, right? But he's really more like a knight. Like, he's even descended from somebody named Arthur. It's like, that's why I brought it up in our Arthurian Legends class. And, like, he's the line of, he's like the last in the line of these knights, basically.
Yeah, that's where I remember you talking about it. So, you did a presentation, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, I remember you did Camelot 3000 for that presentation.
Fuck yeah, right? I did.
And I did the Dark Tower.
Okay. We should read that for this show, because Camelot 3000 is fucking magnificent. Oh, we did read it for the show. That's right.
We have read it.
God, we've been doing this so fucking long, I forget.
but yeah, I personally am pretty excited for the trailer. Or, I mean, for the movie. I mean, the trailer was cool. I need to watch it again. Since we're talking about trailers, did you guys see the trailer for The Defenders?
Yeah. I'm not pleased.
Why?
How do I sum this up? I think the thing that I like about the Netflix Marvel shows is that they're a lot more subdued, and kind of more psychologically engaging than, you know, things like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the Marvel movies. And this one felt super Marvel movie to me. It felt like very, like, punchy in its lines in not a good way. But, you know, it's just a trailer. Like, I'm excited for the show. I just didn't feel like the trailer appealed to me. And if I didn't have the background of the other shows, I probably wouldn't have picked it up based on that trailer.
See, I feel like after watching the trailer, like, they're targeting more of me and my wife, where we like tying the stuff together and the idea of a team, but, like, Daredevil is too violent, and I watched the first episode of Jessica Jones, and at the ending, I was just like, no, I can't handle this. I don't want this. Like, I recognize that it's got to be a magnificent story to move forward from there, but I don't want to watch a mind-rapey villain show, because it just creeps me out too much. But I love Luke Cage, and I think the dynamic between Luke and Danny can be great, and the dynamic too that we could have gotten with Matt and Jessica and the other two, like, since we didn't watch those shows, we're missing out on those characters' experiences, and we don't need all the background to have, like, watch the show, but, like, there's comic book history between Jessica and Luke, just to put it mildly. You know, and I want to see that kind of stuff play out, and I would like it to be on a punchier show. Punchier is great. What you're talking about?
Did you watch Luke?
Yeah, we watched the shit out of Luke Cage. Yeah, we're halfway through Iron Fist. We took a break.
I finished Iron Fist. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not as good as the other three, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
It was fine. People like complained about the fight scenes, and I mean, I guess it's not like watching. Like, I don't know, like, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It's not like that much kind of martial arts, but it's...
No, and people complain about the fight scenes, and then you read something like where the actor who's playing the Iron Fist had, like, 2 weeks before shooting started to learn martial arts of any kind. And it's like, of course it's not going to be that great. And you're hearing this, they're saying a lot of the same things about Inhumans. That they're doing a similar thing is just kind of throwing them out there. It's like, oh, come on, guys. A little bit more time.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not that excited about Inhumans. But we'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, do you guys want to talk about this week's comic? Because I really, really do.
Let's do it.
Okay.
All right. Four plays over.
This week's comic.
This week, we read Odyssey, Off to Far Ithaca, written by Matt Fraction with art by Christian Ward. I have hyped this book up a lot, and I want to say, after reading this again, I don't know, like, I'm feel genuinely kind of torn, because I don't think I should love this as much as I do, considering how much I complain about other like fucked up mind-bendery things, especially Grant Morrison things. Right? Like, I feel like as much as I complain about other stuff that feels like this, I shouldn't like this as much as I do. But I've read this again and again, and now this is the third time, and I love the shit out of this thing, and I don't know why. Well, I mean, I can point to reasons why, but like every indicator of my experience reading comics points to me that this is not something I should enjoy, but I love the shit out of it.
Well, is it really that fucked up and mind-bendery? Because if I look at it, it's actually following Homer's Odyssey.
Yeah.
Like, really closely. And I feel like the weirdest thing about it is what the back cover says, that it's gender broke.
Yeah. Not even gender bent, gender broke.
They broke it. Well,
the thing is, yeah, I mean, but it's explained in universe. So after, like, they explain it, it's like, okay. It's just like, you know, it just is. That's the setting, right? I mean, it's interesting seeing like Hera with a beard, but still being like a sexy lady kind of. I mean, but it doesn't really like, it doesn't pull me out of the story because it's explained in universe. It's like, okay, so this is just how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. The back cover says specifically modeled after Homer's Odyssey is a psychedelic, gender-broke science fiction epic that tells the story of three legendary warrior queens returning home from a centuries-long battle. Like, that's, yeah, dead on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the thing, too, I think it's mind-bendery, or it's mind-bending in some ways because of the visuals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think the story itself... Okay, so if we're gonna compare it to Grant Morrison, like often I think of Animal Man,
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm.
Animal Man leaves the story and meets Grant Morrison and stuff, and that's kind of a trippy thing. Or what was that one we read?
Ugh. The Filth.
The Filth, exactly. Yeah. whatchamacallit? Like that is pretty mind bendy because like. The story is hard to follow and that kind of thing. But this is not necessarily that. I think there's parts of this that are, it's not as easy to follow as a normal narrative, but mm-hmm. I think maybe that's because of the prose and the way some of the lines are delivered. But I think once you get used to it, it's easy to follow.
Yeah, because something that's not easy to tell maybe because it's delivered in comic, is that this is told in a kind of verse.
Yeah.
Which is not something you encounter very much in comics. So it, reading comics and reading verse on a comic book page makes it feel disjointed when it doesn't necessarily read that way if you're reading on a page. But I think that's where the art really helps, because the art has such an incredible flow to it. Like, we talk about panel work and all this kind of stuff, and art being kind of feeling loose and flowing around. This is the loosest, most flowy kind of art I have ever seen. Like, this thing, like, you can almost feel the color dripping off of the page as you flip through.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, and it's not just that. I feel like this, it's so bright and so visual and so vibrant, that it's hard not to look at it and appreciate it, even when it's something that's grotesque. Like, I some of the most beautiful pages in this comic are the ones that are also the most fucked up. Like when Zeus is ripping off the head of, oh, whose head did she rip off? Right as she's deciding to kill all men. It's the first page.
Her father? It's Cronus.
Yes, it's Cronus. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And that page is beautiful. Like, she's ripping off the head and there's like a galaxy exploding out from his neck. Like, it's crazy beautiful. And even the pages with the Cyclops are disgusting and horrifying, but the art in it is amazing. And it's so weird to have that juxtaposition to, like, want to look away because it's horrifying, but you can't because it's so beautiful.
Well, I feel too, like, it's so surreal that a lot of the body horror is removed. So things that would normally be, like, kind of, you know, gross to look at or just unpleasant, like people getting horribly dismembered or chewed up. Mm-hmm. Are just not, it doesn't have the same impact. And then you also see this kind of like repetition of body parts throughout as part of the scenery. Like they go to the love planet.
Yeah.
It's just like a pleasure level made of boobs and a mouth.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of mouths in this. Like you see just like these disembodied mouths, yeah. Usually like bleeding. So I feel like there's so much distortion of what bodies are, and then so much like repetition of seeing random body parts in places that when you actually see it connected to people, like the effect is really subdued. Like when, what's her name? I forget the woman's name, but Dionysus's mother explodes when she looks upon Zeus in his form or her true form. Like that's a person exploding and it, like, there's a little, like, embryo flying out, but that could be way more horrifying than it appears on page.
Yeah. Oh, man, talking about the body parts, you're right. I hadn't picked up on the mouth thing, but, yeah, there's even sometimes where there's the disembodied dialogue, and as the panels are going down, it's reducing the speaker from part to part to part until, like, the last panel at the bottom of the page is just the mouth moving.
Mm-hmm.
That happens a couple times in here, too. And there's things I feel like I can't talk to because I'm not anywhere near a gender scholar. And I feel like this is, I mean, you have to be a gender scholar to get all of the stuff in here, I feel like. But like a lot of the stuff with boobs, it's like, if there's one gender, then a lot of stuff that is currently sexualized just becomes completely desexualized. So it, like, it makes sense in looking at it that way, that some of this, like, it would come up over and over, because who the fuck cares? It's all women now. And there's no sexualization of some of these body parts. But then you do get the pleasure level.
Yeah, well, there's still, I mean, and that's actually kind of the thing that I appreciate. Like, there are no males, but the women are still very sexual.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they in Prometheus, the female name they gave Prometheus, which I can't remember right now, you know, invented the Sebex, which is neither gender. So it didn't violate Zeus's law. And it seems like they are, like, Odysseus has a Sevex lover. It seems like they are often used as, like, concubines, almost, in this universe. Or, like, the scene where they're, I am, like, so blanking on names right now. Aeolus.
Yeah.
You know, meet him, and Odysseus leaves, like, four of her girls to just seduce him while the rest of them get away.
Yeah.
Right. So, in some ways, yeah, it's desexualized because everyone, like, has boobs, right? But on the other hand, these are very sexual people. Mm-hmm. There's, like, a lot of sex in this comic. But yeah. I think that's a really interesting kind of way to look at it, too. So.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned how she left some there, but before that, earlier on, there's a discussion that they're having, and they tell Odysseus, like, not all of your crewmates find respite with a Sebek. Some of them are wanting to stay here with this guy. And then there's just, like, a line of women waiting for him.
Yes. I really love that scene, where it's just, like, it's maybe more than half of the crew we've seen, too, yeah. that's, yeah. like, standing in line.
And I like it because it's something that, I can't remember which. There's a Hindu text, though, where Krishna is reincarnated in a small village, and they become aware of it, and there's a line of women outside of his house. Because who doesn't want to fuck a god? Just to say they've done it, at the very least, right? Like, and it makes perfect sense. Like, I would. And if this is, like, one of the last dudes left, and he's related to the line of gods, like, yeah, it makes perfect sense there'd be a line of women out his door. And it, yeah. like, it's something that would just be completely glossed over in another comic, not necessarily, but yeah, and it handles it in a very matter-of-fact way.
And I'm actually looking through this now, too, and I've noticed, so we see a lot of naked women in this comic, but it doesn't shy away from men. We see Aeolus, and the first shot we see of him is, it's a full page spread, and the very center of the page is his package, just yep. out for the world to see, right? So it's just, I think, a comic that doesn't shy away from bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it makes sense. This is a very bodily comic. There's so much focus on, like, the gore, even they pilot the ship with, like, in these pods. It seems like a whole body engagement. Like, they have to be synchronized and, like, it's mental, but they also, like, we see them having, like, nosebleeds and stuff, so mm-hmm. it looks like it's also physical. It's just...
Don't they refer to it as, like, womb something?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think so.
I don't remember.
Well, I mean, the overt sexuality, I think, also harkens to the source material. I mean, just think about all of the, not only people that Zeus has sex with in these, ancient Greek plays and pieces of literature. Think about all the animals he has sex with. You know, I mean, sex is such a fundamental part of the religion of the old Greek source material. Like half of knowing Greek mythology is knowing who fucked who and who came out of that and what fucked up ways they were born from it. Like, didn't Aphrodite come out of a testicle that somebody cut off into the ocean or yep. something fucking
yes.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, well, like, a lot of it too is not just, like, the sex, it's the parental aspect and the weird parental aspect. Right. So, like, the immediate thing you see is incest. I think mm-hmm. it's, I want to say Neptune and Gaia. Like, Gaia cuts off
Uranus.
Uranus. Yeah. She cuts off his balls, and that's how we get, like, three Titans plus Aphrodite. But then, later, like, their kids, two siblings, Cronos and Rhea, have a bunch of kids, which include, like, Zeus, Hera, Poseidon, etc., and they hook up. Like, Hera is Zeus's wife. So, and as we see in the comic too, like, we get the whole thing about Zeus going back and killing her father. And there's so much focus too. Like, there's this weird scene where Poseidon is talking about how Odysseus' ship is going through Poseidon's space, and all her children are there on those planets, like the Cyclops and Aeolus. And Zeus, before punching Poseidon to death, like, says something like, "No, my seas, my children." And it seems like family, paternity, and in this case, maternity, are like forms of control as well.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, cause Zeus, like, is so worried about, you know, her children coming back to get her because she did it to her father, that she destroys all men. So, I mean, I cannot even begin to unpack what's going on here with, like, you know, sexuality and sex and people's children and their parents.
Yeah, and I mean, the, like, and it, that resonates too with the way these different gods interact with each other and their offspring that we get to see here. Like, we see Zeus being a terrible mother father, and then we see Hera, and Hera acts all high and mighty, but we see the other side of that too with Artemis, who, like, Artemis sees herself as having been kidnapped and not saved, and gets a fucking backhand for it, for being a savage bitch. And it's like, Hera, you're not a whole lot better than the person that you're talking about. You're not a whole lot better all the time. And that, again, calls back to the source material, where all of these gods are just bickering back and forth, and they're just stuck. Like, all of the mortals are just, like, stuck with whatever the fuck they decide to do. But yeah, I mean, that's, you mentioned, Poseidon and the children on all of the far-flung islands. But yeah, they're all, it all falls under Zeus, the all-mother-father? All-father-mother?
I think, it seems to me that, like, those parental titles are, well, because Zeus is referred to as, like, all-father at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those titles, we can't necessarily equate them the same, meaning that they have in our dual gendered world, right? I mean, Zeus is still the she is the all father, and they kind of, those like father, brother, mother, sister, those kinds of things seem to be, you know, interchangeable almost.
And yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, they mean the same things, but the roles, because there are no men, both roles are taken by anybody who is in that role, you know? It's kind of interchangeable. Zeus is a mother and a father, even though Zeus has a husband and wife, right? I mean, it all works, right?
Yeah, and I mean, we see it too in, like, the source mythology, like, in some ways, because first off, does gender really matter when you're, like, spending your time as a swan or a bull or whatever? Like, there's this kind of transformative thing about Greek gods where, yes, they are in the image of humans, or humans are in the image of them, but humans kind of have these strict rules that we have to be, like, who we are. But the gods, they can become what they want. And then in the story of Dionysus, right, Zeus's lady friend in that context, like, explodes. And in the original story, Zeus, like, opened up his thigh and sewed Dionysus into his thigh until the baby was full term. And then, you know, pulled it out, and there was a fully formed god. Same with Athena. Zeus birthed Athena from his skull. So, like, the Zeus mother-father thing is, it certainly has precedent, and I think it's done really well here, too, so.
You sound like you remember your Greek mythology a lot better than me.
I like it, but. Go on.
So, am I crazy, or when I was reading this, some of this, I don't know if it's just because of the way it's written, but it feels like some of these lines are almost taken directly from a translation of the original Odyssey. Am I insane, or is that possible?
I kind of was thinking the same thing. And part of the reason why I agree with that is the numbering at the beginning of certain word bubbles. And I meant mm-hmm. to check this in my, I'm sure I have a copy of the Odyssey somewhere. But I wanted to see if that was like the start of a chapter in the actual, the actual poem.
Yeah.
Maybe chapters, I forget what the sections are called in there. I mean, they're not really chapters in the same sense as in a novel, but I feel like those numbers are, I mean, obviously they have some significance because Matt Fraction made it a point to put them in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I think it's supposed to be like that. You know, obviously it follows the story of the Odyssey, but I think you're right, Andy, that some of the text is lifted like straight out of it.
Yeah, I gotta get this in the hands of some Greek scholar at the university where I work and see if I can get some conversation going with such a person.
Yeah, I would be interested to know more about that.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give it an effort.
All right.
What did you guys think of Odysseia as a character in this?
Oh, I have more commentary on that, too.
All right.
Go for it, Jen. Yeah.
Okay. So, I thought it was interesting because so some background. The Greeks viewed Odysseus, as a hero, right? Because, the Greeks were the ones attacking Troy, and Odysseus is the dude who's Trojan horse seems like a good plan. And, mm-hmm. He won them the day. He won them the 10-year-long war, and that's a big deal. But in the Roman sense, so Aeneas leaves Troy and then goes to found Rome later on. They viewed Odysseus as this trickster coward. And I think this is interesting because they always talk about Odysseus being a trickster, a wolf witch, right? I don't know what a wolf witch is, but it sounds trickster figure-esque. So, mm-hmm. It's interesting that
Oh, no, I just had a thought because you brought up Aeneas, and I remember that wolves are central to the founding of Rome, right?
Yeah, with
Romulus and Remus.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is a little bit of maybe Matt Fraction is taking from both sources, but using Odysseus or Odysseia because that's a more recognizable character or more recognizable reference. I don't think most people have, I think many people at least are aware of the story of the Odyssey, but I don't think many people know of the Aeneid, at least not in the yeah. same, general pop culture sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I
think the commentary of cunningness also comes from the gods too, their perspective as a narrator here.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a thing that you see a lot in Homer. It's the epithet given to Odysseus, Odysseus, the clever, and it's a good thing, but here, I'm not sure we see Odysseia be particularly clever. It doesn't strike me. I think one of the places that in the original you see it the most is when Odysseus fights the Cyclops. He originally is I am nobody. And then when he stabs the Cyclops in the eye, the Cyclops is screaming, nobody's stabbed me, nobody blinded me, and everyone thinks he's nutso, so they ignore him. Here, I think it makes this really good point, that fits in the universe of I am all men, right? All men, what is it? All men rendered me thus. So, <Yeah. laughs> there's something to be said there, but the other half of it is Odysseus is proud, and he's also kind of, not like this brave heroic figure. So like before the Trojan War, he tried to pretend to be crazy, to get out of it. And I think they might have mentioned that here, but Odysseus mm-hmm. doesn't strike me as someone who would do something which I think would be regarded as such a cowardly act. Or like Odysseus was prideful because as he was leaving the Cyclops Island, he's like, yo, I'm not nobody, I'm Odysseus. And like Poseidon hears him and is like, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
And here it's just, oh, the gods already know that it was Odysseus doing it. So you don't see as much of that, like, character flaw, I think, because, like, you know, in Greek myth, Greek storytelling, a lot of people have, like, a positive trait and a negative trait that they embody, like, as an archetypal thing. And Odysseus is hubris. He's, like, a really proud yeah. dude, which is why Poseidon's pissed at him in the first place. And we see it here, but it's almost like Odysseus pays tribute to Poseidon's wife just because she's, like, grateful, not because she's trying to snub Poseidon. And I just thought it was interesting how here Odysseus feels more like a traditional warrior rather than, like, a trickster.
Yeah, there's a lot of mention of Odysseus here being battle-hardened and war-tired and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it really, it takes a little bit of the edge off of the cunningness. Cause it, I think a lot of people, you're right, like in Homer, he uses the word clever as a compliment, like being clever to think of the Trojan horse. But in our modern context, clever is not always a good thing. And we would lose a piece of that. So, by making her war tired, every time she's clever, she's not having to fight again. She's not having to lose more women. So it gives that, calling her war tired and battle worn, all like that adds context to the cleverness that keeps getting brought up.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it works here because it makes Odysseus feel more put upon by the gods, and it lets you see kind of who she is as a leader and a person more, actually, because yeah. it's someone, you know, rising up to face like a god hating her, and I think that ends up being telling about a person. But at the same time, like, maybe something's lost. I don't know. Like, I have no need for this to stick to the original in any way, and I'm really enjoying it, so.
Yeah, and I also appreciate the subtle context of, do you really want to get home? Like, she gets pissed when people insinuate, especially her Sebex, like, she leaves her Sebex there when the Sebex suggests, like, you don't even want to go back home to Ithaca. But I think there's a kernel of it there. Like, I think Odysseus wants to go back for her son, which we can talk about that too. But I think she's grown so used to being in battle, and she's so used to at this point, maybe, of her shipmates being her family, that she doesn't know another life. So she's comfortable with what she's doing, and she's not going to be comfortable in peace. But she has to get home. And so it's interesting to see that conflict kind of play out as she's going through like planet by planet, trying to move her crew home. I think she's doing it more for her crew at this point than herself. But yeah, this, we're showing the son as hardcore motive. Like, just having a kid, that's motive. But she has a son, which in this world really matters.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited for that mystery to be resolved. Like, I want to know what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, was the son in the womb during Zeus's destruction of all men? But then, wouldn't there be other exceptions too? I mean, but there are other exceptions, like the forearm dude with his package sitting out all the time. but he's godlike, right? Isn't he related? And don't we see a god in, a male god in Olympus? With the owl. Which is the one with the owl?
That's Athena.
That's Athena.
Yeah, and Athena's a dude.
Well, I don't know if you can necessarily, I don't know if that's a...
That's true. We didn't see any genitals.
Well, and I mean, look at Hera. I think if you only saw Hera from, like, the neck up, It just looks like a dude with long hair.
Yeah, that's true.
Or
yeah.
She looks like. So I think that having a, you know, having a beard does not necessarily mean that the person is male.
True, true. What did you guys, is there a scene that stuck out with you guys or a page that was really visually striking that you remember? Like, for me, it's the Poseidon chained to the planet for so long that she has become part of the world. And when you land, you move down into her bones. Like, that's, and the 2-page spread of Prometheus strapped to the planet. Like, that 2-page spread was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What were you guys? Did you have one?
Oh, like a particular piece of art?
Piece of art or scene or anything that stuck out for you?
I don't know. Like, I think I just, as somebody who is a fan of, you know, I was a big fan of Greek mythology growing up, and a lot of the nods to familiar things was really cool, but I did really like the part where Zeus, like, obliterates Poseidon with the lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was a really cool, was a cool scene. I guess it's not a full page spread, but, you know, like, that scene plus the way, you know, not just the part where Poseidon's obliterated, but the whole interaction between Poseidon and Zeus in that scene, like, it feels familiar. Like, this character is Zeus.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that Zeus is a woman doesn't take away from her, you know, divinity or, you know, wrath. She's just as arrogant and wrathful and prideful as Zeus that we all are familiar with.
Yeah, and Poseidon is just as hypocritical. Poseidon is pissed when people are too prideful in his oceans, but that's because he's proud of his oceans. And this Poseidon's the same way. She's so damn prideful of her space and her children, and when mm-hmm. she feels like her children aren't getting their due, she's pissed at them. It's like, the fuck are you doing, Poseidon? Like, you're the only one allowed to be the most proud? No, that's why Zeus strikes you down, because Zeus is the one that's allowed to be the most proud.
Well, that's how the Greek gods are. They're they're not like the gods that of some other religions. You know, these are incredibly flawed creatures that just happen to be like all powerful.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really omniscient. You know, like going back to what you about Odysseus' son. I mean, I don't know. I haven't read past this trade. But I have a feeling that he is, like, hidden from Zeus's view somehow.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
I get the notion that Zeus is just not aware. And I feel like that's gonna become a plot point in the future when, for Odysseus and coming to a head with Zeus in some way.
Yeah. So, She's gonna have to be clever. The other stuff I really appreciate in the art is whenever we see the gods in Olympus viewing the mortal realm, it's always like a floor that they're walking on or a table that they're looking through with this starry field behind them. And it really does feel like all of the mortal worlds and mortal realms are just theirs to fuck with, like laid bare on a table or laid bare on the floor as Zeus can just stroll across it. And it's like, that page even looks like a 2-page spread of like 100 TVs on the floor almost, and she's just walking across with men's heads exploding.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're just pawns in this game that they're playing.
God, that final page where Hypnos is like, get your fucking house in order.
Yeah.
I love that so much. It's beautiful too. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, what's cool about that, I'm just, sorry, I'm, like, excited to talk about that, too. I get the feeling that the threat to Zeus, when Hypno says that, is a real threat.
Yeah.
Because they refer to somebody that we don't know, right?
Nyx.
Yeah, because he says, I merely suggest that before Mother Night does it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I keep interrupting you.
No, I interrupted you. Please continue.
Yeah, like in the original myths, like Zeus is afraid of Nyx. Like people do not like to go into her realm because she's creepy. So I really, really love the callbacks to just these little things about the mythology in here.
Jen, I love every time you unmute your mic because I can hear birds singing in the background.
Oh.
No, don't. It's beautiful. Jen, is there another page though that stuck out for you?
I think it was just that last page. Last one? Okay. But the saddest page for me was Odysseus Sebex in the water by herself.
I mean, there's worse places to get stuck than the Pleasure Planet.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah.
That was pretty tragic. The character designs, like, for the gods were so good.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, because I did want to talk about that.
Oh, Zeus has thunder thighs?
Yeah. I didn't put that together at all. Well, that's great. I think my favorite character design, though, is Poseidon's. Because she's the goddess of, like, the starway, or the goddess of space between planets, I guess. And she's, as she walks around, she is space. And it's always, like, kind of flowy and loose. It's not like a single coherent formed being, because space wouldn't be. I just love that she's such a great reflection of herself and her realm of power.
Yeah, I mean, I love how, especially later in, you get the close-ups of her, and it's just, it's really beautiful. Like, the art itself, they start including, like, galaxies,
mm-hmm.
or, like, stars in her skin. I just, it's good.
I know, I'm flipping through and I'm finding the page where Poseidon kisses Zeus.
Oh, is that, like, right before Zeus blows her up with the lightning bolt?
No, it's right before Odysseus leaves the Sebex there. And then, like, I like it because you see in Olympus them kissing, and then the next you flip the page, and it's Odysseus looking up into the night sky, and it's, like, just the night sky, like, exploding out from this single point, and it's the point in where they were kissing.
Oh, I did not notice that before. That is really cool.
So it's neat because you can see the whole idea of there are portents in the mortal realm of what the gods are doing if you're just smart enough to read them.
Yeah. Oh, that is actually a really beautiful page, too.
Yeah. Fucking all these goddamn pages are beautiful.
I will say, like, the second I finished this, I saw that Volume 2 was also out on Kindle, and I was like, buy it.
I know, I made the mistake of ordering the trade paperbacks, and then they came out with a beautiful hardcover that collects both of them. I'm like, well, shit.
They have a Kindle version of it as well, and I actually regret not buying it, because I didn't know what I was getting into when I was like, oh, I'll get the cheaper one, because it was like $20, and I was like, oh, that's too much for a Kindle book, but now I want it.
Yeah, I got the $5.99 Comixology one.
Oh, I
yeah.
I got the paperback. But did you guys see you know how they're making like adult coloring books? They made an adult coloring book of this.
It's hilarious.
It's like, in case you also do acid trips like Christian Ward, you can buy this and color it in your damn self. It's the first the first four issues with just the pencils and the inks.
That is really cool.
And it seems like it'd be really fun, but I would be super intimidated. Because, I mean, looking at this, it's not just coloring in pencils and inks, but it's like we were talking about, like, with Poseidon being made of stars. That's all done in the coloring. like how that works is in the coloring and the way that it's shadowed and shaded and the vibrant colors contrasted with the darkness on the white page. Like, no, I can't do that. Way too. Although, you know what? They do have, I saw on the iPad, they have an app for coloring pages. I might pick that up. Because then if I fuck up, I can, you know, just erase it with a tool. Do you guys want to rate this?
Sure.
Sure.
All right. Jen, how about you go first?
This is a 5. This is some good shit. Like, I immediately bought the second volume. I'm going to buy the third as soon as I bother to look up if it's out or as soon as it comes out, whichever comes first. Like, I think that this is a beautiful, beautiful, like, reimagining of something that I already really liked in the first place. And this is so rich. There is so much that I can look at when I read, and like from so many perspectives too. The art is gorgeous. The story is compelling for me. And like, I feel like if I wanted to, I could just spend hours and hours like reading through this and trying to seek connections or like try to guess motives of characters that we have that haven't been revealed yet. Like I can compare to, you know, the, source and material that inspired it. So I feel like from an entertainment standpoint, I enjoyed reading this a lot, but then also if I want it to be, it's like really good, just like brain fodder for me. So I absolutely love this. It's a 5.
All right. David?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5 too. This is, you know, like Jen, I really enjoyed Greek mythology, or I guess I still do enjoy it. I liked it as a kid. You know, I remember checking out this book at my school library over and over again. It was like a big picture book of Greek mythology. And so, you know, I was one of the kids that was excited to read it in freshman year of high school when it was like an assignment. But anyways, this is just, I mean, the art is pretty trippy, but it's beautiful. Like, it's really, really well done. And, you know, like, I know I've complained in the past about certain art that I think is, you know, is doesn't lend itself to comics necessarily. But I think this works really well with it flows with the narrative. And, you know, like the part after they get the new engine from Aeolus and, you know, conveying the speed of the ship. Like, I think that this art style really lends itself to that kind of thing. And, you know, the story is interesting and it's, you know, at first I wasn't really sure what I was getting into, but I'm really happy that we got to read it. So, it's just really well, it's a well put together comic, from a story and art perspective. So, definitely giving this a 5.
Yeah, I like the commentary of don't really know what you're getting into, because I was getting the singles of this because I picked it up because the covers were beautiful, and I have a problem. I do that when I go to the comic book shop. If you put out a comic book with a beautiful cover, I'll pick it up and give it a chance. And I just read the first issue and I was like, what the fuck is going on here? But then the start of the second issue is the explanation of Zeus having killed all men, and then it gives you an in-universe explanation for how gender broke this comic is. And from there, you can move forward and, like, there's no what the fuck is going on. It's all been explained. It's still really fucking weird in places, but it's all in-universe, makes sense. And that's not a step that needed to happen, per se. Like, this could have just been weird for the sake of being weird and being gender-bent or gender-broke or whatever for the sake of doing it. But it didn't. And it didn't because this is this is something you could see Zeus doing in his, her might and hubris and fear, even though, of course, Zeus would never be afraid. Like, it's great because it takes from the source material what it needs to and adapts it in ways that feel natural. But yeah, I'm going to give this a 5, not only because the writing's really good and the adaptation of a classic piece of literature is really good, but I mean, it's very, very rare that we come across art this good, and art this good that, that complements the writing and the story so well. Like, that's the fundamental part of what makes a comic book a good comic book and what makes it a fundamental part of the medium. Like, so many times you read a comic and it could just be a storyboard for a movie or a storyboard for a TV show, or it's just like a script that got written and with art accompanying it. But this art is fundamental to the writing, and the writing is fundamental to this art. And that marriage is like, that's the definition of a good comic book. That's what makes this medium great. So yeah, mm-hmm. there's no way I'm not going to give this a 5. There's no way. And I'm just so happy that we finally got a chance to read this and that you guys liked it as much as I did. But next week, we are going to wrap up our Turns Out It Was Good series. We're going to read... I know, it's such a weird name. Well, it's because it's all the stuff that like we couldn't find a place for before in our previous best of years. And it, not that we didn't know it wasn't going to be good, but we have to make decisions, and sometimes we can't get around to things. And these are the things that stayed in the consciousness longer than the stuff we might have read for that year. So next week, you're going to read Bitch Planet, Extraordinary Machine, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick. I think this one fell through the cracks the same reason that Odyssey did. We read a lot of Kelly Sue DeConnick because she's a fantastic author. So when we start to do the best of, I'm like, I don't know if I want to give Kelly Sue another book on here when there's so many other good authors out there and so many other good writers. But I every day in my Tumblr feed and on Twitter, I see people getting tattoos from Bitch Planet, even though it's not a regular release. And if I see that, it makes me think, okay, this is part enough of the comic book consciousness of our day that we kind of have to read it. There's no getting around it. So next week is Bitch Planet, Extraordinary Machine. Until then, you can go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, you can check out our past 289 episodes. We're coming up on 300. I should probably go check that out, because apparently I completely forgot that we read Camelot 3000. Should go listen to that episode and see what we talked about. Maybe we talked about Dark Tower. I don't know. You can also check out what we have coming up next. We have the next 10 episodes or so scheduled on there. I don't know what we're going to do for 300 yet. There's a chance it will overlap with Hydra Comic Con. So I'm going to see if we can get a live panel there. SVCC denied us because we got the application in too late, but we'll try. You can also support the show by going to patreon.com/welcometocomics. If you become a patron for at least a penny, you get access to a bonus episode that happens about once a month, sometimes a little more often, sometimes a little less. And that's just the extra minutes from before and after the show when we're just hanging out chatting. Usually it's pretty interesting. Half the time it's about Star Wars, so there's no getting around that with me and David. But there's other rewards, other tiers, so go there and check it out. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. Just go and look. Going to the site doesn't commit you to paying anything or doing any of that. Just go and check it out and see what's there. And if you decide that you don't want to go through the whole sign-up process, I get that. Sometimes it's a pain to sign up, but just go check it out. No pressure. But yeah, next week, Bitch Planet, Extraordinary Machine, Kelly Sue DeConnick. I'm psyched for that one. I have no idea what I'm getting into with this one, though. I see it all the time, and I have no idea. I just know it's like an exploitation comic, right? Like in the vein of blaxploitation, but with women.
I'm not sure either.
I don't know.
That's what it is. But yeah, I don't know. But everything we've read by Kelly Sue is fantastic, so I am not afraid of it. I'm not afraid of it letting me down.
I am psyched. I will say that.
All right. That's next week. Until then, everybody, goodbye.
Goodbye.